From the studios of Wavefront Audio Visual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 81 of Little Brother for the 16th of April, 2022. Stay tuned, Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. It seems like the European Union might not be as united as all that. Back in episode 66, I mentioned how the French authorities had shut down Clearview AI, a New York-based facial recognition company, for violating the General Data Protection Regulation, or GDPR, which is not a French regulation, but a European one. Now, a few months later, having booted one facial recognition system, they're turning around and creating their own. A regulation being proposed in the European Parliament would set up an EU-wide network for law enforcement to share facial recognition data with other biometrics such as DNA and fingerprints. The good news is that this network would contain data from arrestees as opposed to the general public, but one can't help but think about how it looks so much like government eliminating competition. On 9 previous occasions, I've spoken about the NSO group's Pegasus spyware. I'll bring it up now for a 10th time, since we're on the topic of Europe, where at least 5 senior officials of the European Commission were targeted by the spyware. Apple actually is the hero in this one. Apparently, they were able to detect the intrusions and sent messages out to thousands of iPhone users, alerting them to the invasion. Apparently, they've done this before, but this is the first time that the messages have gone to government officials. The NSO group have denied being involved and denied that their software could have been involved, which to me smells like a mix of plausible deniability and full-on hubris. Regardless, it reeks. On Tuesday, the Department of Justice claimed that they have raided the website's Raid Forums, an English-language website that sold access to consumer records harvested in some of the largest data breaches in the past 7 or 8 years. They believe that they've tracked down the site's administrator, whom they believe to be Diogo Santos Coelho, a 21-year-old from Portugal. He has been charged with 6 criminal counts. The domain name, raidforums.com, has been seized by the FBI. Going there today nets a message saying so, and it's plastered, of course, with the logos of 9 different law enforcement agencies from different parts of the world. However, the big reveal is that the FBI actually took control of the domain several weeks ago and have been running the site in secret so as to give the participants enough rope to hang themselves. It's been a long-running dark joke amongst IT workers to refer to a thing called job security. It's euphemistic, of course, and refers to systems being in a state that your employer can't afford to fire you. In most real-world cases, the state of the systems is because they're simply in bad repair. Go to last week's show for some thoughts on that. But every once in a while, it's deliberate. An employee might plant a logic bomb, something that does damage to data or software on a given queue. Maybe they do that and tie it to a dead man switch, so if he doesn't run a particular command every few days, it goes off. I've known of people doing this. before you ask, no, it wasn't me. Well, a former sysadmin at an ISP in Pennsylvania by the name of Darius Prugar has been sentenced to 2 years in jail and fined $26,000 for vandalizing his former employer when he was fired. His logic bomb removed scripts that he had written whilst working there and took down roughly 5,500 customers. Guys, don't do this. This guy is literally in jail with a ruined career because he was petty. Just don't. Disregarding my feelings about VPNs, which I spent most of episode 53 laying out, if you're going to use one, it'd be nice to know that they're honest, right? Maybe that they don't keep logs of what their customers are doing? Well, on Wednesday, ProtonVPN announced that they've undergone a third-party audit carried out by European security auditor Securitum, and that Securitum has certified that ProtonVPN is in fact not logging customer activity in accordance with their stated policies. Use it in good health. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned this week. The answer this week is Congress. And not a single law was broken in the effort. It seems that comedian and late-night talk show host John Oliver has worked out a set of characteristics that describe a number of lawmakers and approached a data broker with a suitable query. Without being specific about the findings, Oliver said that he and his staff were, from the data they'd bought, able to identify a number of lawmakers specifically and to connect their search histories that could cause them some issues to this data, and assembled a dossier. Now again, all of this is perfectly legal. In his closing, he gave Congress an ultimatum. He told them that if the Congress are worried about what might happen to that dossier, that they might want to channel that worry into making sure that he can't do anything. I've been thinking a bit lately about in-band signals and the few places that they still exist. Now, not that long ago, when telephones were analog, in-band signaling was the norm. You'd pick up the phone, you'd hear a dial tone. Well, that's an in-band signal. When you tap the buttons on the phone, each one generates a unique pair of tones, and those are all in-band signals. What we're talking about are signals that are used to control things that are embedded in the signal right out in the open, where anybody can perceive it and analyze it. I'm planning to talk about different aspects of this over several episodes, but today I want to talk about one called EAS, which is the Emergency Alert System. Friday evening, I was watching the news on TV, and partway into the news, I heard this. What you are hearing is generally called audio frequency shift keying, or AFSK, and more specifically, this is a system called SAME, which stands for Specific Area Message Encoding. The system is used both by the National Weather Service for triggering alarms on weather radios, and by radio and TV broadcasters, both in analog and digital, to spread emergency messages. A similar system is in place to send alerts to cell phones, however, that's not an in-band system like the one used on broadcast TV and radio. In concept, radio and TV stations monitor one another's signal in a pattern that builds a loosely knit network. When one station transmits an emergency alert, other stations will often pick it up and, if it's appropriate, may or may not relay it. The AFSK signal format was chosen for its resilience. It works on AM and FM and digital audio channels of all kinds. The data rate is very slow, around 520 bits per second. That's not megabits or kilobits, but bits. So 520 bits per second. And so the message is transmitted in a very compact format. I'm not going to try to actually read you the actual text of it, but I'll kind of step through the breakdown of the one that you just heard. It starts with a three-letter code, EAS, which indicates that it originated at a broadcaster. And next, you got RWT, which indicates that this is a weekly test. Then you've got some numbers, 036093. That indicates the relevant area, which in this case is Schenectady County in New York, based on the FIPS location code. Beyond that, it's got a time and a date stamp and an expiration of 15 minutes and the call sign of the TV station that I was watching. And all of that fits into 43 bytes. So that 43-byte signal repeats itself three times. In this particular case, it's followed by an end-of-message signal, which also repeats three times. Those were the shorter bursts you heard at the end. Stations that latch onto the signal and recognize it as relevant are expected to rebroadcast any audio that comes between the start and the end signals. So, beyond the curiosity of it all, why is this important or interesting? Well, there's a vulnerability in the system that I've thought about for years, but I don't think I've ever heard of it actually being exploited. While creating a digital TV signal is non-trivial, and that's not really the case for an AM or an FM radio signal. If someone was to create a signal that mimicked an emergency and played it over a suitable transmitter somewhere near another radio station's studio on the channel that they're monitoring, the potential exists to take over a number of downstream radio stations in the network. All of the information and software that you would need to create such a message is readily available online, and all you've got to do is add a HackRF or even a Raspberry Pi running RPITX to the mix, and off you go. That seems problematic, and I trust that none of my listeners are going to follow through on it. Time once again for the fail of the week. We have two this week. The first up, AT&T. AT&T's wireless network went out of service on Tuesday night in the southern half of area codes 518 and 838, and the northern part of area code 845, basically most of the length of the Hudson Valley in New York State. Down detector stated an absurdly low number of affected users. However, I'm assuming that this is because users, in many cases, lacked a means in which to let down detector know that there was an outage. Users who tried to make phone calls during this time were met with a message that the network was not available. Text messages and data were also unavailable. However, users whose phones were connected to Wi-Fi were able to communicate using data-based apps such as FaceTime, Duo, Signal, WhatsApp, etc. I don't have any info on whether or not Wi-Fi calling was functional. However, the big fail this week is Atlassian. Atlassian is primarily in the business of productivity software for programmers and project managers. We're talking about tools for revision control, issue tracking, collaboration, that sort of thing. These are tools that are going to be deeply embedded into the operations and workflows of whatever IT shops that they're used in. Some of the tools include Jira, which is used for tracking bugs and feature requests and prioritizing problems to be solved. Bitbucket and Bitbucket Server, which handle revision control, essentially providing a scaled-up undo button for changes that get made to software, and Confluence, a wiki that can be used internally by an organization to document, well, pretty much anything and everything. Atlassian have been aggressively migrating customers from hosting their products in the customer's data center to Atlassian hosting them for the customers, moving it to the cloud, as it were, a practice which has several side effects. On the positive side, customers don't need to have a server somewhere running the software because Atlassian is running it for them. It consolidates resources, saves energy, probably saves some money for someone, at least in theory. On top of that, it gives Atlassian very solid control over licensing. If you don't pay your bill, you just can't log in, and that's that. Software as a service, in a nutshell. On the downside, off-premises IT is often slower, and you're trusting someone else with your data. And that last part is the problem in this case. It seems that Atlassian were working to clean up some unneeded data from their servers, and the script that they'd written to take care of the problem got a little, shall we say, overzealous. On the sysadmin forum on Reddit, some folks were complaining that Atlassian were projecting 2 to 3 weeks before the customers would be back online. To put that into perspective, that's 2 to 3 weeks of software developers not developing software. As one Redditor so succinctly put it, Atlassian shrugged. I think, however, the most amusing take I have heard on it was sent in by one of my listeners, Azriel, who said, quote, "Not to defend moving to the cloud or anything, but the move to the cloud pitch of scaling and efficiency 100% lived up to its claim. There is no way I could have scaled a fuck up that efficiently," end quote. Now, normally the fail of the week would be the last substantive thing in the show, but I wanted to build off of one of the fails this week. Back in episode 77, I mentioned the idea of doing a feature on personal OPSEC, so I think what I want to do is start making it a regular feature of the show, kind of like the pwn and the fail of the week, but with a bit less snark. I tell you all at the end of every episode to stay safe and be well, so it only seems logical that I should offer pointers on how to do that. I'm going to push the definition of security a little bit past where most people think it falls. It actually covers a lot more than just locked doors and passwords. That's what people tend to think of it as. You know, passwords on systems, locks on doors, encryption on data, monitoring things, etc. But I'm going to talk about all kinds of things that impact your safety, not solely about tech, but with a strong bias towards it. Sometimes you have to deal with the fact that things just break. Things that you might be relying on for one or another important reason, and you've got to be able to find ways to carry on despite. The best way to carry on is to be prepared in advance. Although it's not always been the case, in today's society we thrive on communication. Personally, I love communication. That love is ultimately the whole reason why I talk to the four of you every week. We carry a device in our pockets that we call a phone, and certainly it evolved from a telephone, and with it we can communicate with people anywhere in the world, and it doesn't cost much to do so. But what about when it doesn't work, like last week Tuesday for AT&T customers in my area, which I talked about in the fail of the week? On Wednesday morning, I got to work to find a message that the on-call supervisor had posted on our internal chat app for the second and third shift guys, basically letting us all know that his phone was out and that he had no way to communicate except through the aforementioned app. That's a vulnerable spot, especially for a 24/7 IT operation. Not really good at all. Now, I've generally held the view that the way to get around communications problems is to have more than one way to do it. I'm kind of an extreme example, by virtue of having two-way radios with some reach to them, but I don't think that's the degree that most people need to go to. Let me instead tell you a bit about how my communications are redundant for both phone and internet in ways that should be generally in reach and reasonable for anyone to do. Let's talk about the phone first. If you've been listening, you've probably picked up on the fact that I have a family. In cases like that, phone companies love to sell family plans. They seem pretty attractive, giving you a way to cut down on the costs of service for everyone in your household, and to that end, they do work. The problem comes when your provider goes down. I have two solutions for this, and I use them both, though I'll readily admit that might be overkill. The first solution is that my wife and I have different carriers. This doesn't have any kind of downside as far as the phone's workings go because they all interoperate as well they should. It's no different for me to call her on a different carrier than it would be if she were on the same carrier as I am. The same would be true for SMS text messages if we used them. For times when we're both at home, if one of our carriers goes out like it did Tuesday night, the other one probably doesn't. And indeed, that was the case. So the first takeaway, if there's more than one person in the house, get phones on different carriers. If you've got more than one phone for yourself for some reason, get them on different carriers. For a second solution, we actually have a landline in our house. Pretty quaint, huh? It's not a full-on traditional landline in that it's not a pair of copper wires that go all the way back to the central office. It's actually voice over IP, or VoIP, and that means, of course, that it's dependent on our internet working and us having power, but that's okay. The likelihood of an internet outage seems pretty low with our ISP, and we do have backup power. But besides that, this phone is just a backup. It costs us less than $7 a month for unlimited usage. If I opted for a higher paid plan, I could even put the VoIP service on my mobile phone and have both lines with me everywhere. So, second takeaway, cheap VoIP service can be your backup. So that's the phone, but what about internet? Well, as the internet backs up the phone can back up the internet. On the grounds that I absolutely need reliable internet for me to be able to do my job, I bought a plan with my mobile phone that includes a lot of tethered data. On the off chance that the internet at the house goes out, I can tether my phone and get some basic function back, and I'm not cut off from my job. It's not as fast, but as one of my friends is very fond of saying, it's a non-zero where you had a zero. As a bonus, I can go mobile when I want, and I have enough to share with my friends when we gather in public places for one or another hacking-adjacent activity. So takeaway number three, just like the internet can back up your phone can back up your internet. The final piece of this communication puzzle is text. As you've heard me mention before, I am a big fan of the Signal Private Messenger app, which uses data to send and receive text. It can also do voice and video calls, but text is the primary use, at least in my circle. While this has some features that make it more secure in the colloquial meaning of the word, I want to point out that you can also use it to hedge against problems with your phone service. If your phone goes out, but you're in reach of Wi-Fi, no problem. Signal keeps working. That also holds for WhatsApp, Telegram, whatever. I actually used this a couple years ago when my wife was away for an extended period of time in a place that had Wi-Fi, but no cellular coverage. All right, so what happens if Signal Private Messenger itself goes out? Don't laugh. That actually happened around February of 2021 with a massive influx of new users. The answer is SMS text messages or any of the other apps that are out there. There's competition, and that means there's diversity. So the fourth and final takeaway is to take advantage of data-based apps to keep your communications going by Wi-Fi when your phone service fails. So that's the idea of communications redundancy. Have multiple tools at your disposal, make sure they all work, and don't put all your eggs in one basket. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fungaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Knight Rider 007, Azrael, and Michael for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Week music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or just want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next week when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Stay safe and be well. See? That, right there. That's what I was talking about. I say that at the end of every episode. Stay safe and be well. Consumer request... Portugal. You know what? Let's do that one more time. Two jars in jails. Maybe they don't keep logs of what their customers. Episode. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for prioritizing. Mm-hmm. Yep. Bitbucket and Bitbucker. Bitbucker. Mm-hmm. Colloquial, meaning the colloquial. Mm-hmm. And our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and I screwed that up.